Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Sports Inquirer podcast. This is your host, E. Marcel Portout. Hope all of you had an excellent weekend out there. Sorry we weren't able to record too many shows last week. I wanted to do one or two more, but life comes up and things happen. But glad to be with you here on Monday, April 29th. Spring is in full swing right now. Had a rainy weekend here in Atlanta, but it was really good for the yards and really good to take care of that pollen out there. So happy that it took place. Washed my car, too. So anytime you get a free car wash from nature, always appreciate that. As always, we're brought to you by the SportsInquirer.net, the premier news site for the world of sports. Also, we are brought to you by the StartingLineup.net. Going to start working with them. Matter of fact, I've been promising you the past few weeks I'm going to be working with them starting in May. May starts on Wednesday. So I'm going to have a big talk with them over the next few days to figure out my role with the StartingLineup.net. They're based out of Chicago, doing some really big things up there. And as always, if you want to head to the site, my site, thesportsinquirer.net, you can go there and everything is on there, as well as on Twitter under Sports Inquirer. Starting to gain a little momentum here in Atlanta, getting some excellent follows by various sports personalities here. So excited about that. Hopefully we can get them on the show and we can get some good dialogue going. Also on iTunes, subscribe to us at The Sports Inquirer so you can get all of our archived shows and our new shows that come up over time. Really jam-packed sports weekend that we had, so I'm going to review the NFL draft. Going to start on the offensive side of the ball and going to talk about, we're going to start off talking about the general media coverage of the draft from NFL Network and ESPN and overlying themes from there. Then we're going to talk about the offensive players, the players that I like with their teams, and then some players who I think are a little bit questionable, maybe not the best fits for the teams that drafted them. UFC 159 took place as well. Going to review all of the action from Newark, New Jersey. NBA playoffs are in full swing as well, so we're going to talk about every playoff series, just give my quick overviews of that. Miscellaneous new things as well. Going to talk about the state of Arsenal football. Was able to watch Arsenal Manchester United yesterday, so I'm talk about that. Talk about some country music. Probably the most famous celebrity in the world got married once again. I have some things on that, and then debuting another segment, what I'm watching. Going to talk about some shows that I'm really into that are currently in season that I was able to catch up on this weekend. I did mention it was very rainy outside, so there was a lot of inside time to not only watch the sporting events, but through the beauty of the internet, you can get everything archived. So I was able to catch up on some shows as well. So we're going to take our first break here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. And when I come back, I'm going to talk about the NFL draft that took place over this past weekend. So I watched the NFL draft on the first round on Thursday night over at Condor Addison's house. Been trying to get Condor to come back on the show. He got a good reception a few weeks ago when the NFL draft combine was going on. But he is actually in the middle of his school year. That's what happens when your NFL draft analyst is in high school. So he's been going through that and trying to get the grades right. And he's doing really good, actually. But, you know, at the end of the year, a lot of activities going on with that. Hopefully we can get him on. Maybe later this week or early next week, but I watched a draft from his house. Interesting commentary on the draft. He actually has NFL Network and ESPN at his house. We only have the ESPN here at the Portout compound, but I watched the NFL Network I thought there were too many analysts on there. I like Rich Eisen as the host. I thought he did a decent job of keeping the flow going. But between Mayock, let's see, you had Mayock, you had, well, Deion Sanders was doing the comments, doing the interviews, and we'll get to Deion in a moment. But you had Marshall Faulk, you had Michael Irvin. It was just too many people, I think, up there and too many moving parts involved. And I don't know if it was maybe the Condors TV or if it was maybe the NFL Network, but the video quality was extremely low for HD standards. I know it's being very picky. And my beef has always been, if you're complaining about HD TV, you should have other complaints going on in your life that be more concerned about. But I thought if you're going to have HD TV, I thought the video quality was low for some reason. I thought the NFL Network did a better job of interviewing the actual players. I don't know what was going on with ESPN, but when I was flipping back and forth, because I wanted to hear from the players after they were drafted, seemed like NFL Network, maybe they had first rights over ESPN to get to interview the players. But I thought they did a better job with it. The Deion Sanders interview with E.J. Manuel, I thought was excellent. We'll get to E.J. Manuel and his placement in the draft and how he fits with Buffalo. But you saw the emotion of Manuel crying and really showing the true essence of what it means for these men to be drafted at all. And I think we spend so much time, I'm going to do it myself and analyze where these players are going to fit with their team. Some players drafted maybe higher than expected or lower and everything like that. It's still an incredible shining moment for those individuals. They've busted their butts for years to get in that position to be drafted in the NFL and pursue their professional dreams. So I think while everything is so choreographed and staged, I thought it was good to see the actual emotion from a player that, honestly, he was drafted a little bit higher than expected, but I think he was just overtaken by the fact that he was drafted. And he taught, and it's been chronicled, his mother has had some health issues over the past year or so. So, I mean, I think that obviously played a part in the emotions for him as well. But really happy to see some of that. So I thought NFL Network did a better job of capturing those moments. ESPN, if you've been reading my writings over the past few years and just know me on a personal level, you know I'm not the biggest fan of Chris Berman and all of his antics and all the sounds he makes and everything like that. I didn't think he was too bad. The analogy at the beginning of the draft, talking about the Legos, that's gotten a lot of internet attention. I really didn't get that myself with the X's and O's or the squares and rectangles or circles, whatever he was trying to talk about. That part was a little bit much, but outside of that, I don't think he did too bad of a job. I thought he let Mel Kiper and John Gruden get their moment and get their say and what was going on. I like Kiper. I know he's easy to make fun of. But I respect the hustle of anybody like that that finds their niche in one particular thing. And I respect Kiper because, trust me, as someone trying to break into the sports media industry and with so many people that are generic and sounding the same, I respect someone who finds their one niche or their one interest and obsesses over it and does that job. I followed college football a decent amount of time. And there is absolutely no way that I could reach the level of Mel Kiper. And yes, he does have access to a lot of resources and a team that probably assists him with getting all the tape and the video and analysis. But he's been in the game for 30 plus years. So I have no knock on him as far as his hustle. And he gives an honest analysis of it. Now, as far as the overlying things that I thought were a little too much or I did not like as far as the media coverage, the Manti Te'o commentary, I understand that he is, if you're not a football fan or a fan that follows college football consistently, he's probably the most known player in this draft just because of not only playing linebacker for Notre Dame, finishing second in the Heisman, the whole internet fake girlfriend situation, he's really crossed over into a mainstream position. So I understand that where he was in relation to the draft was they were constantly reminded of he hasn't been drafted yet and no one's looking at him. I thought it was a little bit much on both sides. I thought it was much on ESPN and NFL Network. They talked too much about a man who ended up not getting drafted until the second day and did not get drafted in the second round on Friday. I thought they spent too much time talking about him on Thursday in the first round while there were so many other players that deserved their moment in the first round. And even if you look on the internet, on the NFL Network, maybe Rich Eisen and Mike Mayock had a moment where Mayock said even he was tired of hearing about all the Tao talk. Geno Smith, the ended up being, I guess, the every year there's one person that ends up the last person in the green room. I think they had to do their job as far as the cameras go. He was the most known quarterback, or the quarterback projected to be selected the highest going into the draft. So you expect the networks to show a lot of him on camera. And I said he wasn't drafted until Friday. The thing I didn't like about that is there was so much controversy, or there was debate about if he didn't show up on Friday, day two of the draft, that would affect his stock or affect how teams perceived him because he couldn't handle adversity. I think that was a lot of crap, honestly. He's going to go. I think these NFL personnel are smart enough to realize that it's a dog and pony show, honestly, all of the players being at the draft. It's a fun dog and pony show. I always call it the Academy Awards for sports fans, where, you know, a lot of people, like movie fans and entertainment fans, they watch the Oscars, look at who won and who lost, look at the fashion and everything like that. I think sports fans, the NFL draft has become that. So they it's all about the drama, who won. We can analyze if someone should have been drafted higher or lower. While it's fun for us as fans to watch it and to view it, for NFL personnel, it's the most important 3 days of their season as far as off-season personnel. So I think they're going to realize that if a man doesn't show up or does show up, or what he's wearing or what his entourage is, that doesn't matter a lick. And if he can play and if he can handle adversity and participate and be a good professional. So I didn't like how that actually became a story. He ended up showing up. The Jets drafted him second round. He got his photo on the stage and everything like that. But, and we'll get to Geno Smith and where he fits in the Jets' plans. But I thought that was a little bit much. And then finally, as far as the media coverage, the Trey Wingo interview with Tyrann Mathieu, the Honey Badger. I talked about how I enjoyed E.J. Manuel's emotion with Deion Sanders when Manuel was drafted. I mean, I felt the similar feelings with Tyrann Mathieu when he was interviewed by Trey Wingo when Mathieu ended up getting drafted in the third round by the Cardinals. I really want the kid to do well. And that was the one thing I took from, two things I took from. First thing I took from it was, I really hope he does well. And I said, we've all made the Honey Badger jokes, and he has a great nickname, and we all like to talk about him. In the end, he's a young kid that obviously has made some mistakes in his past. And I think, and I hope, he has humility. And he talked about humility a lot. He's been knocked down many pegs, from being suspended and ultimately kicked off of the LSU football team to dealing with the drug issues. I think he showed a lot of humility with these emotions on it. I really hope the kid does well. I hope all these guys do well. And that's another thing. I really hope all of these guys do well, make their money, become Hall of Famers, become professionals, and can make a living. I hope they all do well. I mean, obviously, you know, we all joke about how we want to have I'm a Giants fan, maybe not want a Cowboy to do well or an Eagle do well, just because it helps my Giants, you know, make success and achieve some of their goals. But as far as professional men go, I want them all to do well, and Mathieu was definitely right at the top of my list of guys I want to see succeed. As far as the interview goes, I thought it should have been a little bit less. The first minute or two, obviously you can see Mathieu really was struggling to speak, very emotional and about being drafted, and he didn't expect to even, he honestly may have thought he may have not been drafted, and he finally got in the third round. I thought Wingo pushed a little bit of the personal issues too much, and Wingo does an outstanding job. As far as all the teams and the coverages of the draft, I think that his second, the second team with Wingo, Mel Kiper, and Trent Dilfer, and Todd McShay, I thought that was the best grouping or the best teaming as far as the draft coverage goes. But I thought the Wingo interview went a little too long, and they really should have cut it off when Wingo, even when he stated, do you realize the responsibility of being drafted and what has to be done? I think Mathieu does realize that, and I thought that was a little bit much to keep pushing it, and that's when the interview kind of went to a halt and grinded out. But as being, you know, being a picky analyst of it, but I thought Mathieu handled himself well, answered all the questions well, and talked about what he needs to do. And we're going to talk about the defensive players in my next podcast recording on Wednesday. But that's an excellent fit for him being in Arizona. So those are my thoughts on the media coverage. Let's get to the actual players. Offensive line dominant, as we expected, as far as the top of the draft. Eric Fisher going first overall to Kansas City. Luke Jokel being drafted number two by Jacksonville. Rest of the top 10 picks as far as offensive lineman Lane Johnson, Jonathan Cooper, and then Chance Womack, all in the top 10, Womack going to the Tennessee Titans. I can analyze skill players pretty decently because, you know, you watch college football, you can kind of tell who can translate their game to the pro level. Offensive lineman, I have no clue, honestly. Or I think Eric Fisher, he looks really good. The scouts seem to like him. I saw more of Jokel, so I like Luke Jokel a little bit more. But Fisher could turn out to be a decent pro. Womack coming from Alabama. That whole offensive line is well coached. You can expect a lot there. This draft is going to be tough to analyze as far as the top half until 2-3 years from now, especially with offensive linemen. It takes a lot of time for those guys to develop, so I don't think it's fair to give grades necessarily to, oh, this team did better than the other team in any draft, because you have to wait 2-3 years. But especially in this type of draft when you're dealing with so many linemen on both sides of the ball. But it was offensive line drama. Now, let me talk about some players that I think are going to be good with their teams and their spots. I love Tavon Austin going to the Rams in the first round. They need to increase their offensive weapons for Sam Bradford and give him no excuses to achieve success. Austin gives you a lot in the return game. Can use him in a variety of ways as far as passing him the ball, maybe even some packages where he takes the ball out of backfield. Like that pick. Aaron Dobson, second rounder for the Patriots. Highlight film looks good, and played at Marshall, so you don't know about the competition necessarily. But the Patriots need a deep threat. They need someone to catch the ball, especially with the loss of Wes Welker. So Patriots did a good job of addressing their offensive needs. Ace Sanders, fourth rounder for the Jaguars. Surprised he went so low. If you watch SEC football like we do down here in Atlanta, or in the Southeast in general, Sanders has been maybe the best offensive, one of the best offensive tools in all of college football for the past 2-3 seasons for the Gamecocks. Good, excellent return game. Remember his, I remember one of his kicks against, return kicks against LSU this year. Really excellent player. I think he's going to do an awesome job for the Jaguars, who can use as many weapons as they can as well. DeAndre Hopkins, first rounder out of Clemson for the Texans. Finally give Andre Johnson a complimentary piece on the outside to maybe take some pressure off of him. Keenan Allen, a San Diego third rounder out of California. He's going to have an excellent quarterback in Phillip Rivers throwing him the ball. He should be comfortable playing in San Diego. He might be my dark horse for offensive rookie of the year if all works out for him, if he stays healthy. He's going to get plenty of opportunities to catch the ball. He's going to produce some good numbers for the Chargers. So I like that pick for him if he does well. Nile Davis, Kansas City third rounder. If he did not get hurt during his junior year, he missed all of his junior year and then came back this past year for Arkansas as running back, and the whole Arkansas situation, they're a complete mess there. There was a time where he looked like a first-round pick when he was at Arkansas and was one of the most productive running backs in all of college football. Him and Jamal Charles are going to be a nice combination in the backfield for Kansas City. The Marcus Lattimore pick going to San Francisco in the fourth round, good move for him and good move for the 49ers. He can be on the injured reserve list for the rest for this whole entire season, rehab his knee, especially when we have Frank Gore and LaMichael James with the 49ers. Lattimore is not needed, so I like that pick. Tyler Wilson is going to be your starting quarterback for the Oakland Raiders in 2013 or 2014, this upcoming season. Like that pick for him in the fourth round by the Raiders. I know they have Terrell Pryor and Matt Flynn, who they traded for out of Seattle. Don't expect much out of Flynn. I've never been a big fan of his. I think Tyler Wilson can come in and take that spot. So watch out for that. Joseph Randall, fourth rounder for Dallas. Like that pick as well. You can never have enough backfield help. The Cowboys we've seen in the past between with Murray from out of Oklahoma, he's been productive for the Cowboys. We've seen the Cowboys. We've seen have produced a lot of good running backs out of the draft, and I think he's going to be another guy who's going to get some excellent reps. One of the more underheralded guys at a running back. He came out of Oklahoma State. I like Joseph Randall very much. I also like the Jaguars. I like what they did in offense. I mentioned Ace Sanders. Also in the fourth round, they got Denard Robinson, who is going to be a really good piece for them out of the backfield or catching the ball. And furthermore, he gives you some excellent offensive packages as well. We all talk about the Wildcat or whatever version you want to call it, or a spread offense. Robinson can give you some good options there as far as some special packages. And you know he can throw the ball at least decently enough to be respected. So I like that pick for them. And finally, probably my deep, deep seventh round pick, as far as the offensive side of a pick, I like Marquise Wilson out of Chicago, or out of Washington State, selected by Chicago Bears. He left Washington State under some mystery. I guess he had some clashes with Leach, the head coach over at Washington State. I saw several of the Cougars' games. He is an excellent talent. I saw the draft grade. I was reading some reports where he may be slow or not strong enough on the outside. He produced a lot for the Cougars. And the Chicago Bears can always use an offensive weapon. I like that pick for them. If he makes the roster, and obviously seventh-round pick, it's always a questionable option if he's going to even make the team. If he makes the team, I think he's going to make some excellent contributions for the Bears. So those are offensive players I liked. Obviously, there's another side of players and positions that I have questions about. First one, Geno Smith to the Jets. And word in, well, now that Tim Tebow was officially cut by the Jets as of this morning before we started recording. I don't know what the Jets are doing as far as their quarterback position. So right now, as we speak at noon on Monday, April 29th, we have to time it when it comes to the Jets. Let's see, they have Mark Sanchez, Geno Smith, and David Garrard, and I guess they, yeah, and then they have maybe one or two other quarterbacks. I don't know what they're going to do with that. Geno Smith, I liked him coming out of the draft. I just didn't like him for the Jets, especially with Mark Sanchez. Whole Tebow situation, it was what it was. They took him for publicity. They got what they needed, and he's out of the door. Mark Sanchez has been very unproductive. He's never going to be a productive quarterback in the NFL, at least with the Jets. The best you can hope for is maybe he goes to another team, he reinvents himself, and improves a lot of his fundamentals, and maybe could be a decent starter in the league. But with him and the Jets, that marriage is done. So you're going to go into probably next season with Sanchez on a long-term deal, Geno Smith and David Garrard. That's not going to be a really good situation for him. I did not like that pick. EJ Manuel going to the Bills in the first round. Personally, I like Geno Smith more. I liked Tyler Wilson more than EJ Manuel. Manuel has the physical gifts to do well, but he was very inconsistent at Florida State. So I did not see much going on with him. Monty Ball going to Denver in the second round. I don't mind him taking a running back. I just would have gone with Eddie Lacy. Monty Ball has a lot of mileage in his carriage. Carried the ball a lot of times for Wisconsin. Very reminiscent of Cedric Benson when Cedric Benson came out of Texas and ended up being drafted by the Bears. He carried the ball so much in college, I thought he came into the league maybe with some damage, maybe slightly damaged goods, and I think that's going to really hurt him down the line. Gavin Escobar going to Dallas in the second round, not a fan of that pick. Matt Barkley with the Eagles in the fourth. I can see where the Eagles are coming from with that. Yeah, the first round grade quarterback follow you all the way in the fourth. I just don't know what that's going to fit with Chip Kelly's offense, especially when you have Michael Vick and you have Foles and Dennis Dixon already on the roster. You're taking on a fourth guy. We'll have to see what happens with that. I think the best offense would have been a pro-style West Coast offense for Matt Barkley. If we're going to go with what we've seen out of college from Chip Kelly when he was at Oregon and New Hampshire as a coordinator and as a head coach, I don't know if that offense is going to suit Barkley as far as that up-tempo style of play. But we've never seen it happen at the pro level, so I'm skeptical of that pick very much. Going back to the Cowboys, Travis Frederick with Dallas, the first round, taking a center. I don't like taking a center in the first round. I know that that was a really sore spot for the Cowboys with multiple injuries at that position last season. I just think you can maybe find that pick later on. So I wasn't sure about that. And then finally, Mike Glennon going to Tampa in the third round. I wouldn't consider Nassib there or Barkley or Wilson. They had several options at quarterback that they could take. And I guess this maybe was a wake-up call to Josh Freeman. I like Josh Freeman personally as far as quarterback play for the Bucks, but I'm not in the locker room. I'm not a coach. So maybe they see something. They need to get some motivation for Freeman and give him back a plan at the QB position for this season and next. So those are my thoughts on the NFL draft. If you have any thoughts, please send me an email to sportsinquire@gmail.com. When I come back, I'm going to review what we learned from UFC 159 here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. We're back with our latest edition of Verbal Submission, where we analyze the latest events in the world of mixed martial arts. Had a big event take place on Saturday, UFC 159 in Newark, New Jersey. Anytime an event happens in the tri-state area, I always get envious and miss my territory. I'm really excited that next week I'm actually heading off to New York City. My high school is having a big reunion on Thursday night. Yes, Thursday night. There's a big event taking place there on Wednesday. That's one of those days. So it's actually school's 125th anniversary. So shout out to Browning High School out in New York City. So I'm heading up to New York for that. Really excited, and also get the vibe and stay in the city. I'll be up there during Knicks playoff time. So that's always a fun event. But anyway, event took place. The UFC Fun 159 in Newark, New Jersey. Press conferences will take place in Madison Square Garden in New York. They're really trying to push getting mixed martial arts sanctioned in the state of New York. We'll go into a big debate about that. It's the only state in the union right now that does not have a form of sanctioned mixed martial arts. There's all a bunch of reasons for that, but I'll save a debate for another day. My point being, there in the tri-state area, John Jones, that's the biggest thing I learned from UFC 159, is a champ is a bad man. Beat Chael Sonnen in his own game. Going into the fight, I think on Twitter, I was seeing the predictions and the different picks of what would happen. A lot of people, Jones was the overwhelming favorite. If Chael Sonnen won, that probably would have been one of the bigger upsets in not only UFC history, but mixed martial arts history, just what both guys are coming into the table with. I thought that Jones would do what he's done in his past few fights, use his reach advantage, jabs, kicks, maybe use some of the elbows, and the fight would drag on to the second or third round. But it did not. First round TKO. Jones really went back to his wrestling roots and his basics, was able to gain the clinch, take advantage of the cage. It really roughed up Chael with the dirty boxing. The elbows were brutal, the standing elbows. I don't think there's a fighter in MMA that I've ever seen that uses standing elbows or flying elbows, whatever you want to call it, better than Jones does. Obviously, the reach advantage helps and the leverage that he gets from it. But Jones was able to use the grappling, got the takedown, got the TK ultimately to get the victory. And next thing I learned is the separation is starting to establish with some champions and their divisions. Jones tied Tito Ortiz for most consecutive defenses of a light heavyweight title with 5 with that victory over Chael Sonnen. I don't know what's going to happen in the next fight. I guess he was looking at Alex Gustafsson as maybe the potential guy to fight at 205 in the next title defense. But I think you're seeing Jones, Anderson Silva, and Georges St. Pierre really being one fight away from cleaning out the division. Jones, if he beats Gustafsson, he's beaten probably the top 6 contenders if you did a ranking or power rankings. And hopefully we get a power ranking here on the Sports Inquirer podcast maybe this time next week. But if you did the rankings, if I'm thinking unofficially, only one left is Dan Henderson. And Henderson is maybe had some of the his tarnish get worn off with that loss to Machida. But if you're looking at the wins that he's had, Jones, over the past 2 years, he's beaten most of the top guys in the light heavyweight division. Same thing with Georges St. Pierre in the welterweight division. He has Johnny Hendricks coming up, hopefully by the end of the year. So we're going to have that come up. And Anderson Silva, outside of a Chris Weidman win, that's probably going to happen later on. It happened this summer when they fight, I think in June or July. Those guys are cleaning out the division. So what that means ultimately is we're going to see that super fight at some form. We're going to see a Silva versus John Jones or Georges St. Pierre versus Anderson Silva. I know those guys have respect for each other and their various techniques, but if their money is shown, they're also professional fighters, they're going to compete against each other, you know, in some way. So that's where the potential for super fights is going to happen more and more as we start seeing these three men continue to dominate their respective divisions. I also learned that Roy Nelson is content with his current place in fighting. I'm not a big body guy as far as the weigh-ins and seeing if a guy, how many abs he has, or if he looks buff or maybe soft in certain areas. Obviously, you can tell sometimes if a guy hasn't trained and looks really bad. My biggest example as far as MMA goes is when Randy Couture fought James Toney, and you saw the gut and the belly on Toney, and you knew he was going to be in trouble fighting Couture. 99% of the time, I really don't even notice the physiques of the fighters when they do the weigh-ins. But the disparity between Roy Nelson and Chet Congo, who fought on Saturday, was incredible. You look at Chet Congo, 230 pounds of, I guess, physical perfection. Just if you made an MMA fighter out of a lab and you said this is the body type you want for a heavyweight, Chet Congo would be it. Just as far as his physical makeup, the height, the muscle, everything like that. And then you see Roy Nelson, who came in 250 plus pounds for a body frame that really honestly should be carrying around 220. He has the extra fat on him and the big gut, and maybe it's because of the beard and the extra long mullet. Roy Nelson just looked a complete mess at the weigh-in. And you look at those two together, and if you didn't know mixed martial arts, you'll say, oh, Congo's going to beat that short, you know, pudgy guy. But obviously, it's mixed martial arts, and we are fans of it. We know about Roy Nelson. Got the knockout overhand right that knocked out Congo. And while we've had the commentators and even Dana White talk about how Nelson could be a light heavyweight and he should lose weight, and that would improve his fighting skills, he's on a 4-fight winning streak right now, looking the way he does. He's not going to change his fighting style or fighting look at all. He's going to keep doing what he does. And while that may limit his potential in the long run, that's what we're stuck with as far as Nelson. And he was chiming to maybe for a title fight against the winner of Antonio Silva and Cain Velasquez. If Chael Sonnen could get a fight in the light heavyweight crown, despite not fighting in the division for 5 or 6 years, maybe Nelson can get his shot eventually as well. Michael Bisping and Phil Davis are in no man's land. It's nothing I learned watching UFC 159 during this verbal submission. Both of them won their fights in decision. Nothing really too impressive, but nothing too bad about those guys. Davis is one who... Bisping, I think, is kind of stuck in middleweight purgatory. We've documented him and talked about him in the past. Phil Davis is one who I thought would be at a higher spot by now as far as in the light heavyweight title picture. He just seems to be relegated in the top five or six, and I don't know what's going to happen with him over the next few fights, but it seems like he's just stuck there. But I mean, he got a win, so that was decent. Final thing I learned, visual injuries is going to continue to be the fuel for critics of MMA. I personally, maybe because in mixed martial arts and just seeing boxing and other sports over the years and combat sports, I'm not going to say that I'm numb to injury, but Jones' broken toe, that was a nasty one that they showed on camera. Anytime you see the bone protrude the skin, obviously we saw with Kevin Ware with the broken leg that he had in the NCAA men's basketball tournament when he was playing for Louisville this past about a month ago. We saw that visual, and that was just a lot to take in. Seeing Jones' broken toe and Jones even struggling to get words together during that post-fight interview with Joe Rogan, it's one of those things that you're going to see it plastered. It's like, oh, this sport is barbaric. The sport is terrible. But that's just athletics. You're going to see broken bones and things are going to get torn. It's the risks that these athletes take when they walk into the cage or play their various sports. I don't like to see injuries. I wish that all these guys could compete, men and women, at a high level, and they don't get injured. They can continue to live their lives. But when you step onto any athletic endeavor, you're going to have injuries. And Jones knew the risk of fighting, and he got the surgery. Even on Twitter, he just posted his surgically repaired toe. He's going to be out a few months. And let's see, we're hitting into May right now. We may not see him until next year with that type of injury. That's a nasty one. And a big toe, and I know Shaquille O'Neal and a few other athletes can attest to this, we take it for granted as far as how important it is for our walking functions or running functions. That toe, I mean, if you're in your office or at your house, just stand up, or you can hear, just click my microphone, but just put your foot down on the ground and see how much pressure you put on your toe. You push off of that big toe, and if anyone sprained their big toe or stubbed it, like all of us have at some point, you realize just walking or getting up or doing anything like that, something related to your feet, how significant that is. And that's nothing compared to trying to be in a combat sport where you need that strength and dexterity in your toes and your feet to pull off all of your moves. So that was just, that's a major injury. And he's actually lucky he was able to stop Chael in the first round, because if he sat down on that stool for the second round and he got to the breathing and calmed down and the adrenaline wasn't as strong as it was, that fight may have been stopped. If the athletic commission or the referee or the doctor saw that, they would have stopped the fight and Chael Sonnen would be your new light heavyweight champion. But it didn't happen that way, so we're going to see what happens with the future of John Jones as far as 2013 goes. So those are things I learned from UFC 159, and I'm going to take another break, and when I come back, we're going to have our latest edition of Backdoor Cut, and I'm going to give you my state of each of the playoff series in the NBA playoffs here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. Man, latest edition of Backdoor Cut. NBA playoffs are in full swing. A lot of long nights, days and nights for all of us sports fans, and dealing with that. These days are, while I enjoy my sports and enjoy watching the games and analyzing them and speaking to all of you out there in internet land, it's a lot to take in, all of these games, as far as 3 to 4 NBA playoff games per night or per day. And of course, I have to watch every single one of them to completion or as much as I can. It's a lot to take in, and the first rounds are always the worst, and we're going to get into that with hockey. But NHL, starting tomorrow, we're going to have 3-4 games a night there as well. But it's a busy time, but a fun time for everyone involved. I'm just going to give you my quick thoughts on each of these series and what you can kind of expect over the next day or two. Two of them are already over, and let's get to one of them. Miami swept the Milwaukee Bucks 4-0. No surprises there as what you're going to see there. Milwaukee came into the playoffs with a sub-500 record. Really were no match for Miami, who were able, outside of maybe some sketchy moments in Game 2, were able to handle the Bucks pretty easily. Dwayne Wade, another injury. He actually sat out Game 4. Long term, that's always something to watch, because while the emergence of Chris Bosh has been good and the bench of the Heat have become solid contributors, especially particularly Chris Anderson, Birdman, has been doing his work, the Heat are still going to need a healthy Dwayne Wade to repeat as NBA champions. We all know that. So anytime he's injured for any reason, with his injury past, you got to take note of it, but it didn't really hurt him with the Bucks series. New York currently leads the Boston Celtics 3-1. In that series, Jason Terry finally showed up for the Celtics in a major moment, able to contribute a lot of points in Game 4 to help the Celtics avoid the sweep over the Knicks yesterday. J.R. Smith was really missed by the Knicks last night for Game 4. He's going to be back off of his suspension. I think the Knicks are going to take care of business Game 5 at home, handle the Celtics pretty easily, who, of course, are dealing with the missing Rajon Rondo with injury. And we're going to get to injuries at the end of my backdoor cut. But without him, the Celtics really have not much of a chance. They won Game 4 just out of pride, and the Knicks should handle them pretty easily. Indiana leads Atlanta 2-1 in that series. George Hill is going to continue to cause trouble for the Hawks. Indiana's really going to handle them pretty easily for the rest of the series, but Hawks got a nice win in Game 3 to get that one. Chicago over the Nets, surprising random classic of Game 4 that took place on Saturday. Chicago won that one 142-134 in 3 overtimes. Watching that game towards the fourth quarter, you saw that it looked like the Nets were going to tie that series up and get it to Game 5 at home, tied at 2. Then Nate Robinson went off, had 29 points in the fourth quarter and the 3 overtimes. That was like the Nate Robinson moment of his career. And if you follow the NBA consistently, we all know Nate. We like his hustle, like his play. Just shoots the ball very erratically. You never know what he's going to do on the court. He's actually been harnessed pretty well by Tom Thibodeau and the Bulls this season. But that was just a Nate Robinson vintage performance where he just took over the game. Steve Kerr was even joking that they should put a statue of him in front of United Center. Obviously, Michael Jordan has a statue there as well. But that was actually, I think he scored the most in a quarter by any Bull in a playoff game since Michael Jordan. So he had his Jordan moment there, that potential game winner in overtime with that running bank shot. That shot looked like it was going to be a complete air ball or hit the backboard and not get no rim, but it went in. That was incredible. Joe Johnson has some good runners in there as well. He hit a runner himself to get the game in a double overtime, but the Bulls prevailed. Joakim Noah playing 40-plus minutes, doubling the time that he was limited to, or double the time that they wanted him to play. He played a lot of minutes. Luol Deng played a bunch of minutes. We'll see what happens Game 5 coming up here, how the stamina is for both teams. But Chicago got a 3-1 lead over the Nets. Oklahoma City up 3-0 on Houston. Big story there, of course, is Russell Westbrook and injury to his knee. He's out for the rest of the playoffs. Kevin Durant scored 20-plus points in the first half of game three. Really saw an asserted offensive effort from him. He finished it with 41 points, which tied his career playoff high. They're going to take care of the Rockets in this series. I think Houston can definitely win game four. Game five, Oklahoma City will take care of them at home. Durant, I think, if he can keep his offensive output, the Thunder should be okay. Problem is, you need a complimentary guy, and as much flack as Westbrook has gotten here on the Sports Inquirer network by myself and some others, he's still a 20-plus point scorer, and you can't just eliminate 20 points from your scoring output and expect things to be normal and be the same, despite Durant's brilliance on offensive end. So Oklahoma City is doing their thing. Spurs and the Lakers. Spurs swept them, no contest, none of the games were close. Lakers are in complete disarray. Dwight Howard and his antics getting thrown out for dumb reasons. All the injuries for the Lakers, old team, Kobe Bryant with the Achilles tear. Gasol, story came out, he had an injured finger, so he has some issues as well. Just complete mess in Lakerland. We'll see what they do in the offseason. Golden State up 3-1 on Denver. If you listen to my podcast before the playoffs, I said this was the one series that I thought can be a seven-gamer. Well, it's 2 7-game series. And the Clippers in Memphis, I thought would go seven. This is the one I picked the Nuggets to win, but I've been very bullish on the Warriors all season, and I really wanted to give them a chance to maybe get that win series as well. Splash Brothers is doing incredible work. Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. Curry is playing. If there was... It's weird because the NBA doesn't have a... Like how the NHL does. NHL has a Conn Smythe Award, which is the MVP of the entire playoffs at the end of the postseason. Normally becomes like the MVP of the Stanley Cup Finals, but it's the MVP for the entire playoffs and what they do. NBA has a Finals MVP, but it's usually based on just the Finals series. But if that was an MVP in the first 2 weeks of the playoffs for the NBA, it'd be Seth Curry, who playing on a bad ankle. He's always had bad ankles, even coming out of college. Playing an outstanding level, averaging 30-plus points per contest for the Warriors. Hitting numerous three-pointers. Distributing the ball very well, especially with Jared Jack. The Warriors intrigue me. Andrew Bogut, he's not going to have a night like he did last night with double-digit points and getting numerous dunks at the rim. But I look at their roster. They have championship... I'm slipping up. I don't know if they have championship contender qualities, but it's pretty darn close, especially when you, as they include Klay Thompson, Harrison Barnes coming off the bench, giving you some points, Bogut, excellent, Landry. They have an excellent squad in Golden State. I think they're going to get past Denver, and their next series is going to be against the Spurs. Spurs better watch out, because if Bogut can negate Duncan on the defensive end, that series is going to be a seven-gamer as well. Obviously, we're moving far ahead. Denver is an excellent team as well, especially at home. If they can win Game 5 and then maybe sneak Game 6 on the road, they'll get Game 7 at home, and the Nuggets have been probably the best home team this season. So we'll see what happens with that series. Finally, Clippers and Grizzlies. Disappointed by the Clippers. I really thought they could have put a stranglehold on the series if they got a win on Game 4 at Memphis. But they just let the Grizzlies and Marcus Gasol dominate inside. That series is now tied at 2. It's a crapshoot. You can flip a coin as far as who's going to win that one. And just overall, the theme that I've noticed through all of the series, injuries. Even David Stern, he was at the Milwaukee-Miami game and he was being interviewed. It just seems like all of these teams are snake-bit with injuries, and I just don't like seeing a playoffs without some of these star players. Just think of all the elite players that were missing from this postseason. Derrick Rose, Rajon Rondo, Danilo Gallinari, who was maybe not a superstar, but a big contributor for the Nuggets. Kobe Bryant, obviously an all-timer. He's out of the playoffs. You just go down the line for all of these teams. Russell Westbrook, one of the top 5-10 players in the league. He's out for the playoffs now. I just don't like seeing all of these series being determined by injuries. And you can tell some of them, injuries are affecting them as far as how teams can play. So I don't know how you can prevent it. It's just a fact of playing 82 games, and that's just a state of things. And and how things work. But I just would like to see, I don't like seeing the playoffs affected by who is not on the court. So those are my playoff thoughts so far in the NBA. I'm going to take our last break here, and when I come back, we are going to review some miscellaneous news and notes in the world of sports entertainment here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. For our final segment of the Sports Inquirer podcast, and going to review some miscellaneous news and notes from World of Sports and otherwise. I got an interest from one of you listeners out there. I appreciate all of the love I've been receiving on LinkedIn. As far as all the responses that I've received, as far as all of you listeners and what you've been liking or commentaries on what I've been saying, LinkedIn has been a really big source for me. I need to set up a group actually within LinkedIn to promote this podcast further. That's some housekeeping. I'm taking some notes housekeeping wise while talking with you guys. So we workshop while we work, as always. But one person suggested I talk some more soccer, and I'll talk some more soccer. I'll talk some more right now. Favorite team in the EPL is Arsenal. Don't get to watch them too much. I'd like to watch some more of their games, but I was able to watch some. They played Manchester United at home at Emirates. They tied United 1-1. Really had got a go early, 1-0. Really hoping that maybe we can, or Arsenal could get a win at home against the current Premier League champions. United clinched it last week, a win at home, 3-0 win against West Ham. But of course, there was a penalty, and RVP Robin Van Persie, who and had a really good run with Arsenal over the past few seasons. He ended up getting the final goal, or getting the tying goal. So now Arsenal has 64 points. They're fourth place. And the top four teams that finish in the Premier League move on to the Champions League, which is obviously a really big goal to compete for the European Championship. But Tottenham right now has 63 points, and they have one game at hand. Arsenal's in a really bad spot right now. I think the rest of their schedule looks pretty decent as far as getting to fourth place and getting another Champions League bid. Part of me actually wants them to finish fifth, and we talked about this in the past, and we'll talk about it in relation in the draft. In the various drafts, if we follow American professional teams in the NBA, NHL, or even Major League Baseball to a lesser degree, sometimes you get to your teams to the point where they're not going to win a championship, they may not even be a playoff team. You kind of want them to lose some games, get better draft position. I kind of have the same position with Arsenal in a different way. Think about Arsenal, they finish in third and fourth every single year. It seems like they've been in that same spot for the past 5-6 years. And they seem to be so content just to finish in third and fourth, get that Champions League money, and keep it moving. I think if they finish in fifth, finish outside of Champions League, that could be a wake-up call for the entire organization, including Wenger and the ownership, to make some major changes and a change philosophy, which is sorely needed, you know, for the Gunners. But we'll see what happens with that, with them. Over this past week as well, rest in peace to George Jones, legendary country singer. Obviously, you know, I lived in Nashville for 7 years, and Jones was always a luminary figure in the world of country music. So I know a lot of people out there, a lot of singer and songwriters who were influenced by him tremendously. Even my singer-songwriter friends, I know that George Jones is one of the older musicians that they really looked up to, just the music and his musicals, his playing, and especially the song lyrics. Wrote a lot about the darker side of life, and I know a lot of the Nashville or the country music community is really mourning his death. So I wanted to give my respects to him with that. Michael Jordan got married again. He stepped up to the plate and got another wedding. I don't understand why these guys. I understand. Let me try to word this correctly. I understand the motive to get married. He's been with his long-time girlfriend, now wife, for a few years. And I understand that the desire to be married and live under that veil is very important. But he went through one of the roughest divorces that you could probably go through with Juanita Jordan. Lost half of his money. And I know, obviously, Jordan is not struggling to pay the bills. We all know he's doing all right in that regard. But it seemed like he'd be one of those guys that would never make that step again. And I'm pretty sure the lawyers are very particular, very careful with this wedding. But hey, it's good for him. He just celebrated his 50th birthday, and that was chronicled quite a bit in the sports world. So good for him finding love again and getting married, but I hope he works that out and doesn't get in too bad of a situation. Another thing that I was able to catch up on this weekend was all of my different shows outside of sports. I said it was a rainy weekend, and I was able to go on the internet. Beauty of 2013 is that it doesn't matter if you miss a show or two. You can just go on the internet and catch them, or a lot of these stations repeat their shows so much. So I was just able to go there and catch up on shows like Smash, the show on NBC about a Broadway musical, or two musicals now. Catherine McPhee is in it, a bunch of other people. Love that show. I'm being a New Yorker, I have a little bit of soft side for Broadway. So anytime I see a show in relation to that, it's always a good time. Got to catch my episodes of Vice. Excellent show on HBO. If you're familiar, I talked about last week, my podcast of interest is the Joe Rogan Experience. A frequent guest on the show is Shane Smith, a creator of leader of Vice.com. Excellent website. It's a news documentary website, and so many stories I can go into that I've enjoyed from them. But now they have a show on HBO, which details a similar format to what they have on the website, but HBO's bigger audience, so more people are seeing it. Really heartbreaking stories. Suicide bombers in Afghanistan. They train these children to be suicide bombers, and they train in Pakistan, and then move over to Afghanistan. Kids who are 8, 10, 11, 12 years old are trained to be suicide bombers. Really heartbreaking story. Got very emotional watching that, especially if you have young family members or mothers and fathers out there. Just seeing these children dealing with that stuff was a lot to take in. They had a story about defectors from North Korea, and they were following a young woman or a group of people trying to get out of North Korea, and all the steps they had to do towards that. They talk about post-war toxic waste in Iraq and how it's affecting a lot of the young children there with the chemicals. Once again, very jarring documentary stories. And it's so disappointing that you have to go to a Vice.com or an HBO to get these stories when you turn on CNN or Fox News and they're debating a correspondence dinner or what politician is wearing or saying this, that, or whatever, when there are these incredible stories. And those international ones, there are a lot of domestic United States stories that can be covered as well. Not going on a political rant of whether liberal or conservative or whatever. It's just a lot of stories out there that need to be told, and we're not getting it from our news sources. But thankfully, we have things like Vice on HBO that you can get it. I just wish you didn't have to work so hard for it. Also, we had I caught up on Veep. Excellent show by Julia Louis-Dreyfus on HBO. She's playing the Vice President of the United States. If you're really into political comedies, it's a really good one. They do an excellent job with it. They're in the second season, so I was watching quite a bit of that. Nurse Jackie, show I just got into on Showtime. Showtime is a favorite network of mine, obviously, with Weeds and Dexter and going down the line. Got to Nurse Jackie recently, so watching their fifth season, taking a new approach. I've not watched any of the previous seasons, but I'm just jumping right into season 5 and going to try to archive them and go back in the future. So we'll see what happens with that. Finally, The Americans season finale is coming up on Wednesday. So FX is another popular show, popular network for me, that I've watched a lot of shows. Obviously, Louie, which comes back in the summer. Excited about that. And obviously, Justified, one of my top 5 shows currently on the air. So Americans has been, or The Americans, has been a show of interest for me as well, checking that out. And then finally, I was able to catch up on my crappy reality television, all my VH1 shows, Love & Hip Hop Atlanta, Gossip Game, able to catch up on those shows, so I'm caught up. I'm really excited about that. I like the Spike shows as well. I know they're scripted and they're very... They're reality shows. I put reality in quotations. They're very staged. But World Worst Tenants and Bar Rescue, I can't get enough of those shows. Maybe it's because I just like seeing all of the drama that goes into these bad tenants and the bad owners of the houses. Bar Rescue is a favorite among my KSU peeps out there, my Kennesaw State fans. So we watch that and we analyze all of the dive bars and casinos and other things they have there, and the drama and the mess of things with that. So I was able to catch up on a lot of my TV shows over this weekend. And if you have any shows that you recommend for me that you wanted me to check out, shoot me up on Twitter at sportsinquire, or send me an email at sportsinquire@gmail.com. And if it's a show that you think I should watch, I'll definitely give it a check out, and we can get some dialogue going there as well. So, conclude the show. Thank you for listening to the Sports Inquirer podcast. We're going to come back on Wednesday with our latest episode to continue reviewing the NBA playoffs. NHL playoffs will be in full swing, so we'll probably do a preview of each of those matchups. Major League Baseball, didn't talk much baseball today, but obviously that's going to be coming up. I'm going to do my Major League Baseball power rankings, and I'm going to save this one for Wednesday. My niece just had her senior prom. I'm gonna preview my ruffling my feathers and how proms are a soft side for me, a very sensitive subject. I'm gonna give you my prom story. Trust me, you're gonna want to tune in on Wednesday and listen to what happened during my prom. There are a lot of tears and alcohol involved. I'll just leave it at that. So again, I'm excited about telling you that story. Until then, you'll know where to contact me. Subscribe to us once again on iTunes under the Sports Inquirer. And until then, good fight, good night.